Hello, everyone. This is Stuart Smith, the co-host of the J-Talk Extra Time podcast. Welcome to part two of this week's J2 special, in which we talk the top of the table and the playoff race, and we also look forward to this weekend's J2 fixtures. Now, in an editing error by myself, hands up, sorry team, I lopped off the first part of John Steele's question, which opens this part of the podcast. He asked about the Tsuegen Kanazawa Montedio Yamagata game. The first part of the question is missing, but I'm sure you can get the gist of what we're going to talk about from then on. Please enjoy part two.
Game?
Yeah, I did. It was part of a, like you just mentioned there, it's part of a kind of really strange weekend where it's almost as if no one wants that second place. It's just because Yamagata lost, obviously Yokohama FC lost, Omiya lost, and yeah, for some, I did watch the highlights, but for some reason that I can't really think, I was under the impression that Kanazawa had won 3-2 before I watched the highlights. I was so convinced that Kanazawa had won that game 3-2. I'd obviously looked somewhere and made a mistake with the kanji or whatever. And I'm watching the highlights and I'm thinking, God, all these five goals all come in the 90th minute. Jesus, this is going to be worth waiting for.
For the listeners, we record late at night and we do it for fun. So
I don't know why I thought that, but it's a disappointing result. There weren't that many chances in this game, but I think Junior Baiano missed the clearest one for Yamagata. A draw wouldn't have been a bad result, given the context of what else happened, but even as a standalone result, Kanazawa is not an easy place to go. They gave Yokohama FC a really good game last week. They're a bit of a difficult nut to crack. They play really compactly and they do have a good set piece, which is kind of how they scored their winning goal. But yeah, I mean, a win for Yamagata would have being huge considering what happened in Kyoto and Kumagaya as well, right?
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, that's a lovely segue. So I'll pick up the baton on those games. I think with Kanazawa, I got the sense maybe they're playing with the handbrake off a little bit because they can't really make the playoffs now. I think 8 points behind. So, disappointment for Yamagata, but then that's tempered by the fact that they hold on to second place for now. As you mentioned, there was also disappointment for the third place team, Yokohama FC, who turned up at Kyoto, protecting a 19-game unbeaten run, and then promptly threw that away, allowing Kei Asento to score a very early goal, I think in the second minute, putting Kyoto 1-0 up. Some pretty dodgy defending, and then more kind of lax defending in the first half, allowed Takumi Miyoshi to kind of stroll in and kind of slot on the second goal. So it's 2-0 at the break. And then, on a fast counter-attack in the second half, Miyoshi struck again. Another very confidently taken goal through the goalkeeper Minami's legs this time. It finished Kyoto 3, Yokohama FC 0, ending that kind of, as you mentioned, long unbeaten stretch. But still leaving them in third place. Now they're level on points with Yamagata on 64, but one goal worse off on goal difference. So that's a very very tantalising prospect as we go into the last five games. Kyoto seem to be back and banging, Stuart, after we rubbished them a few pods ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if either everyone listens to us and wants to prove us wrong, or we don't know what we're talking about. one thing that did interest me in this game was the formation. Now, obviously, like the zone, the broadcaster put up the formations, the starting 11 or whatever, and they put the formations up on the screen. Now, usually most of the time this season, Kyoto play 4-3-3. They play Yoshihiro Shoji as the deep playing anchor, and they play Kazunari Ichimi as their central forward, with Koyamato on one side and Keiya Sento on the other. But I think Shoji was, I don't know if he was dropped or if he was rested, but he was on the bench for this game. He's the captain, so I would have to assume that you don't rest your captain on the bench in against the form team of the division. And it was also, it was Miyayoshi that that led the line in this game, and both decisions kind of proved very fruitful for Kyoto. Maybe that's the spot they needed. Maybe Shoji and Ichimi needed a rest. I don't know. But they, yeah, Kyoto flew out of the blocks. They got an early goal. They doubled their lead in the first half as well. Didn't, from the highlights that I watched, didn't really seem that Yokohama posed too many problems. I think, yeah, they were a kind of damp squib. I thought they'd throw a lot of things forward in, given their seasonal situation, but it was Kyoto that added the third. And like you said, I mean, the difference between losing 2-0 and 3-0, I mean, you might think, yeah, whatever. But actually, when goal difference comes into it, these kind of throwaway goals might come back to haunt people. Like, you know, and it's like we mentioned a couple of weeks ago with Kagoshima dropping six at Niigata. Like, you might think, yeah, you want to get back into the game, but sometimes you've just got to shut up shop, kind of regroup, sort your stuff out, and live to fight another day. And I wonder if we get towards the end of the season, I wonder if we'll start seeing that the goal difference effect start to weigh on teams in both a positive and a negative sense.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. Something that I have a love-hate relationship with the J-League on this specific point of, like, game management, where one thing that makes J2 so exciting is most teams can't manage a game effectively. Whereas when you watch games in top European leagues, there's some, I can't remember, it's like a ridiculous stat in, like, the Premier League, the team that scores first wins, like, 75% of games or something ridiculous. Especially if you're a fan of a weak team and the other team scores first, you may as well go and make a cup of tea, you know, straight away. And I like the fact that's not always true in the J-League. But, yeah, it does tend to happen later on in the season. Just off topic briefly, but yeah, even at the game I was at, Verdy against Okayama a few weeks ago, and Okayama sort of went 2-1 up with about 10 minutes left, and with 5 minutes left they were keeping the ball in the corner to make sure that they got the 3 points. And that is always an interesting tactic for me at that point, because, like, yes, you're winning and you want the 3 points, but you're in the other team's, you know, you could be crossing into the other team's box for 3-1 here. And Okayama in particular, the goal difference is pretty rough, isn't it? They're only on +3, for example, chasing presumably that last player place. So yeah, just it adds an interesting tactical dimension, which is not always not present, perhaps from rounds 1 to 35, maybe in J2. So yeah, agreed. And yeah, like you, I saw I didn't spot Shoji, but when I saw the lineups and Ichimi was on the bench, I think I audibly gasped on my sofa. Because I'll give you. If you leave a player like him out, then you better make sure you win the game. Otherwise, you know what the post-match press conference questions are going to be. Just on Miyayoshi, I don't know what it is about him, but when he plays well, he's, like, untouchably good. But he just doesn't do it consistently enough or often enough, I don't think. And it might just be because he plays for Kyoto, but he reminds me of, like, Atsuka Nakamura, who went on to cash him out. So just, like, you know, just get into the box and then all bets are off, sort of thing. But yeah, just don't see him doing it, doesn't do it with enough regularity, perhaps, to make it higher up. But yeah, it was good to see him scoring two. And I think Yokohama, it'd be very interesting how they react in the next game after having this unbeaten run broken. Will they be able to bounce back quickly and win the next game? I think they probably will, because they're a strong team, but it could play on their minds a little bit. Yeah, I think probably the 3-2 that you were getting confused with between Kanazawa and Yamagata might have been the game at Kumagaya.
It could have been,
Stuart. And this was the probably the most, it turned out to be the most intriguing slash best, in inverted commas, game of the weekend, goal-wise, I think. So fourth place, Omia, eventually lost 3-2 at home to Tokushima Vortis, who are now in seventh. This game wasn't played at Omiya's NAC 5 stadium. They play one game a year at Kumagaya, the athletic stadium, in deepest, darkest Saitama, which I think is pretty unpopular with Omiya fans. So I'm not sure how it goes over with the players. The pitch didn't look to be in great condition from what I could see on TV. But yeah, Tokushima went in front early on through Hidenori Ishii. But David Babunski, who's making a rare start, I think, for Omiya, level things up with a good finish. Naoki Nomura, who's having, I think, probably his best season as a professional, put Tokushima 2-1 up. I think that was a goal that maybe Kazahara could have done better with. Stuart, I don't know if you agree. But yeah, it was 2-2 with 20 minutes left. Noriyoshi Sakai, who's made a habit of scoring some important goals for Omiya recently, level things up. But yeah, Nomura managed to chip a through ball into the path of Yuto Uchida, and he made it 3-2, and that's how it stayed. So a really big win for Tokushima, even though they actually dropped down in the table to 7th. But they're level on point 61 with Mito in 6th. So they're still in with a really good shout at the playoffs with 5 games to go. For Omiya, they stay 4th on 63, so 1 point behind Yamagata and Yokohama FC. And that was the first defeat in a few games for them. So what did you make of this game, Stuart? Pretty hard to assess. It's too many goals for my liking.
Yeah, I think I think just on pure action, I actually think it was one of the better games of the season. Because I think we're getting to the stage where those two teams in particular only have one thing on their mind, and that's getting points for promotion. And you could see that a draw wasn't going to be satisfactory for either team. I think Tokushima went in front 3 separate times, right? I think the first 2 times they were pegged back, yeah. And, full credit to Ricardo Rodriguez. He's got he's marshalled his troops really well. And they're coming into a big finish. It's something that I said before they drew at Tochigi. They're only one game away from completely kind of like face planting, but this is a big win. I wonder how much like playing in Kumagaya like played into Tokushima's favour, because obviously like it's like it's by the book it's a home game for Omiya, but it's not really a home game for Omiya. It's a game at a neutral venue with an athletics track around it. It's more akin to the conditions and the stadium setup that Tokushima's used to. It's not too dissimilar from the Pokhara Sweat Stadium down in Tokushima, and so I wonder if it actually, it was a perfect storm for Tokushima. They got a little bit of substandard goalkeeping play from Kasahara for Omiya, but they took advantage, and they Tokushima not to be messed with, and Omiya, I don't think it's a critical blow, because I think, iron sharpens iron. I think they'll be kind of battle ready for the next game. I think one of the good things was the battle between Juanma and Jordy Boyce, two players that used to play with each other for Nagasaki. I think they were going at it hammer and tongs during the game. Two big physical and strong players going against each other. I think they were all friendly after the game, but during the game there was no quarter given, and I think that was an interesting subtext to the game. And I think Tokushima are not going to be an easy out, and I think Omiya are still in with a really good chance of getting that second automatic promotion spot. But it was a really good game to watch. Mm.
Yeah, I think Omiya have been involved in a few sort of 5-goal thrillers recently. Perhaps they have been a very exciting team to watch. Not perhaps in contrast to how they were earlier on in the season. Perhaps, as you said, the need for points is kind of overriding Takagi's natural sort of defensive tendencies at the moment. I think Omiya might have to get used to playing in the Athletic Stadium, because I believe the long-term plan is that they'll leave NAC 5 and move to a new stadium in Omiya, but that will be a multi-purpose stadium with the running track. So, yeah, it's something we can perhaps talk about.
Do you know?
I think it's because they can't add any more seats to NAC 5 because of where it is. They can't get any planning permission or the council. It's complicated, but I think that they're doing a Tochigi basically, and Tochigi are leaving the Green Stadium for a multi-purpose stadium. I think it's the same with Omiya, but I'm not up to date on that, so let me check, and we can talk about that in a later pod. We should mention that Omiya do have their game in hand against Fukuoka, postponed from the typhoon, which is coming up. I think that's now been announced. That's going to be on Wednesday, November the 6th, so a couple of midweeks from now. So that could, you know, they're 1 point off the automatic promotion places at the moment. That could all change, obviously. And they have 6 games left. Most of the other teams only got 5. So, no need to press the panic button for Steve Baum et al. Just yet. Okay, so, Stuart, what about the mixed fortunes for a couple of other sort of playoff hopefuls? We'll just wrap up the last couple of games on the slate from the weekend. First of all, Fagiano Okayama. Now, they're rocking 8th. 60 points, so just one behind Mito and Tokushima in 6th and 7th respectively. They won again. They beat Nagasaki 2-1 at the City Light Stadium, this time at Koto Ueda. Put Okayama in front with his kind of trademark left-footed free kick. I don't know how I feel about this. For me, this is clearly an own goal because it hits the frame of the goal, then hits the goalkeeper and goes in. But I sense I'm fighting a losing battle with modern football on this one, so never mind. And then Hayato Nakama, who else? I think that this was an absolutely brilliant goal, and I could talk about this for hours, so I won't, but you should check it out on YouTube. Keiji Tamada pulled one back for Nagasaki late on, and Ichimori had to make a really big save with his feet right at the end to preserve Okayama's 3 points. I think he had a bad day at the office in the last round, so I'll give him a shout out this week. What did you make of this game, Stuart? Can you comment on the nature of the own goal / not own goal situation?
Yeah, well, as a goalkeeper, you don't want to. You've already suffered the ignominy of having the ball cannon off the post onto your face and into the net. You don't really need the extra, cherry on the top of the cake by giving it to you as an own goal in
this world of stats. If I'm a striker and I have a shot that hits the post, I don't really want that. I want the goal. So can I just have the goal if I have a shot that hits the post? I don't see what the difference.
Well, is it a shot which hits the post? Is that classed as on target?
Well, I might not be qualified. I mean, how can it be? If it was on target, it'd be a goal, surely. If it hits the post and goes in, it's on target. I don't know. I didn't mean to open the can of worms, but it was a good goal. It's 12:40
a.m., John. Let's move on from that.
And another thing about the goal, just kidding.
Nakama's goal was brilliant. Off the chest, half volley, beautiful. And I know Cervantes got the weekly save of the week, and his was a fantastic save. But Ichimori Jun's save from the long range effort, you're talking about the one which he saved with his foot, right?
It's the one where his entire body weight is the wrong way.
It's a sensational save. It's so good because the ball moves so violently at the end, and just he has to adjust it. He has to adjust his body so quickly, and I mean, that save was worth 2 points. I mean, when you start adding up like points that goalkeepers like get for the team, that's 2 points which could be crucial come towards the end of the season. That was it was a brilliant save. I mean, Okayama just keep humming along, as long as we've said it a zillion times before, as long as they've got Lee Yong-jae and as long as they've got Hayato Nakama, they're going to be a match for most teams, and they're not going anywhere quickly unless one of those players gets injured or sent off.
Yeah, I think Nakama in particular, that ball, he sort of controls it with the top of his chest. It would have hit him in the face, I think, and it's really travelling when it comes to him. He doesn't have much time to react, but instant control on the top of the chest, and the sort of I think it's half volley, isn't it? Just strokes into the back. And the goal that you only score when you're super confident, I think. That was great to see. I'm running out of superlatives for him this season. We should mention very quickly on the topic of big saves, Shinsuke Tsutsumi, the Kagoshima United defender, made a brilliant goal line clearance in that otherwise drab 0-0 draw against Yamaguchi. I don't think Navy Blue Wasp would forgive us for not mentioning that. So we should say well done, Shinsuke. It's not the most impressive clearance you'll ever see, but the positional play to actually be there to execute is what made that great defending. So he's a defender of the week and shift half of the week from the same game, I think, this round. Last game we should talk about then very briefly is Kofu went down 2-1 away at Tokyo Verde. This game played at Ajinomoto Field in Nishigaoka, not regular Ajinomoto because of the Rugby World Cup. But there was kind of a theme of teams scoring quick, like a pair of quick early goals in this round, and it was the same here. Gilton Paraiba and Ryota Kajikawa scoring the goals. Kajikawa's goal was a really good one. I think not the kind of goal you associate with him, or you don't really associate him with doing anything, so it's good to see him scoring a sort of 20-yard curler. And Peter Utaka was sort of one-man woodwork hitting machine here. Did you see the one where he heads it onto the bar, then kicks it into the goalkeeper Kamishimoto's face?
Yes.
Another Russian player boots it onto the bar again. It's like Keystone Cops for a while, and then I think he hit the bar again a couple of times in the second half. But it wasn't to be his day, and Kazuhiro Sato eventually pulled one back for Kofu, but it wasn't enough. They went down 2-1. Just perhaps Kofu had one eye on that. As we mentioned, they were involved in the Emperor's Cup this midweek, Stuart, or was that giving them a free pass that they don't deserve, maybe?
Well, I mean, if they were, that's completely the wrong decision. I don't think they were. I think on another day that they'd have won 5-2, because I mean, just the
amount of time. You're going to tell me that all these Utaka shots are on target now, aren't you?
I'm only kidding. It was quite bizarre though. It was like a magnet towards the crossbar, and then when it didn't hit the crossbar, it hit Kami Fukumoto bang on the nose. And it's just like, all right, he should have.
That was also quite funny because it literally rocked him back on his feet.
Yeah.
Like he was almost like punch drunk for a second. Yeah.
I don't know. After like slagging Verdi off a couple of weeks ago, I quite like the look of Verdi now. I like the look of that Gilton Paraiba. I think he looks a really good player. He looks quick. He looks decisive, and. I don't know if he'll be there next year. I don't know if Verdi are that competent enough to make sure players that they sign in June are there in the June of the next year. But he looks a really good player to build upon. Kajikawa's goal was superb, I think it's from an aesthetics point of view as well, it looked really good at that Ajinomoto Field. You had the large band of Kofu fans behind one goal, very close to the pitch. You had the large band of Verdi fans behind the other goal, and it looked and sounded like a proper game. And it's a bad result for Kofu. It doesn't exclude them from the playoff picture, but it makes it a hell of a lot more difficult, I think.
They're still in with a shout, aren't they, with five games left. I think Hideki Nagai is very quietly got one hand and four fingers on the Verdi job on a more permanent basis, I think. I wouldn't be surprised if they... My impression was that he was a sort of firefighter brought in to kind of see them through the season safely after they fired Gary White. But I think... as you mentioned, he's been helped a lot by the fact that players have come in and done well. Should also give a shout out to Junkie Koike. I know he scored the hat trick last week away at Ryukyu, but overall, he There's quite a few sort of older players having good seasons, like Nakama, Naoki Nomura, Vortis, another one. Yeah, I think Koike is also playing some really good football this season. So you've got him on one side, Jarlton Priber on the other, and Clebinho as well, kind of sort of around. So I think, yeah, there have been aesthetic reasons. I'm not sure how much Hideki Nagai's actually done other than get the players in and let them play. But yeah, I think it's interesting, really, now again, a bit like kind of they'll probably handbrakes off now, they're safe. So that also makes them a dangerous and unpredictable opponent, I think. You're kind of not really sure what you're gonna get, I suppose. So all right, Stuart, how about the games coming up the weekend? We should mention there's no J1 this weekend. That's because the Levan Cup, the League Cup final, is taking place on Saturday at Saitama Stadium, Consadole Sapporo against Kawasaki Frontale. So in a sort of media blitz, that means all of the lower league games are also on, just have to be on Sunday. They can't have any games on the same day as the Levan Cup final. So it's all Sunday this week. Are there any games on the slate that look good to you?
I'm interested to see how Yokohama FC respond, because they're hosting Tokyo Verdy, and you've just said Verdy have not got a lot to lose. They actually look pretty sharp going forward. I think that'll be a decent game. That's on Sunday at 2 o'clock, I think, at Mitsuzawa. The other games, Tokushima versus Mito. I mean, that's a game with huge playoff implications. I mean, should Tokushima win? I mean, conceivably, they could go, depending on other results, they could go up to third or even second. I mean, 6 weeks ago, that would seem almost impossible. But if they beat Mito at home, which these days you'd think they have a pretty decent chance of doing, I would say, then that's a huge game. I'm focused on Nozuta and the 3 o'clock kickoff between Matsu and Gifu. What do you think?
I totally agree. I think Matsu against Gifu is a big game. I think that'll be incredibly cagey, or let's be honest, as cagey as Gifu can do. Because cages, they can make it. I think the only other game that I thought might be interesting is Kofu hosting Kagoshima, another 2 o'clock game, because I think Kofu need a response after losing that game against Verdy last weekend. And Kagoshima, as we know, not the greatest team in the world, but I think it's now or never for them, isn't it? They have to get something from that game. So I think that could be just interesting if... depending on who scores first or just how the game actually plays out. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a draw there. Kagoshima maybe end up taking a point somehow. I'm sure Utaka will score a hat-trick now, but there we go. Yeah, I thought that might be an interesting one. We'll do a quick J3 wrap-up before we say goodnight, Stuart, but very, very broad brushstrokes. In J3, seven games to go for most teams now. But Giravans Kiti Kyushu actually on top of the table, which surprised me when I checked earlier today. They've got 52 points after winning 1-0 away at Numazu in the previous round. And that means that Fuji Yamai FC are in second, 2 points further back. They drew 0-0 in the big game against fourth-placed Kumamoto, who are a little bit further back again on 47. Gunma, who've been the leaders for absolutely ages, they're suddenly down to third because they surprisingly lost 1-0 away at Tottori last time out. And coming up again, this Sunday, Kita Kyushu are hosting YSCC, so you'd expect Kita Kyushu to win that one, I think. Fujieda on the road at Sagamihara, which I think is a more difficult game to call. Gunma hosting Toyama, who are fifth, and they've been on a really good run. I didn't really think they were in with a shout of making it into the promotion picture, but they're just on the fringes now. And they might have a chance if they can spring a surprise in that game. And yes, Kumamoto in fourth place, hosting Numazu this weekend. Any comments on J3?
No, just the fact that it's a huge chance for Giravans Kita Kyushu this weekend. They have designs on J2. They need to win this weekend, and they need to win handsomely. Goal difference could come into it for them as well. And so when you take on YSCC, you should be looking to fill your boots. And Yeah, big game for them this weekend.
Mm-hmm. I think we need more soccer-specific stadiums in J2, don't we? So just from that point of view, we should urge Kitty Kishon. And as we talked about last week, for anyone that missed it, as far as we know, Fuji Eda won't be eligible for promotion to J2 for next year because of their license, J2 license situation. So I think any support of the teams at the bottom of J2 should probably be willing Fuji Eda on for the last seven games of the J3 season as well. Also worth, very finally, all teams observed the kind of moment silence before kickoff last weekend, you know, in remembrance of people who've lost lives and property and other things in the couple of bad typhoons that have hit Japan in the last month or so. And we talked about that last week as well, just to reiterate. Best wishes from us to everybody who's affected, and as much as possible, we hope that people's lives get back to normal soon and that the football helps them a little bit with that. With that, Stuart, I think we should bid the listeners farewell and get back to our normal lives. Thanks for listening. Bit somber. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. We could always talk about when is a shot on target or off target.
Yeah.
But all right. Thanks for listening, everyone, and enjoy the football this weekend. And Stuart and I should be back next week to wrap things up and change tones awkwardly once again. So thanks for your time, Stuart. Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
No problem. Looking forward to it.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye bye.